Well, I asked for sound off open lines and we're getting it. Wow, I've never seen more people upset about things in all my life. Calm down, calm down. We've been kept in our homes a little too long, maybe. That could be it. Anyways, we'll come back with more calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines. George Norrie with you. And as I mentioned, we do take your text and tweet questions as well. Tom is back in Los Angeles with that phone. And Tom, what do you have for us?
Well, this one from Taylor in Portland, Maine. Do you think things would have played out differently if this was a virus from Sweden or, say, some other country?
Not necessarily, except that coming from China does give it the appearance of being a little more sinister.
A lot of hate, yeah. Yeah, it does. It's
you know, I mean, I want some answers that I'm not getting, and that is, why did we give $3.7 million to this
land? He's not going to admit that.
You know what? No, but somebody's got to tell us.
Well, we know already.
And
right?
As a matter of fact, the president stopped a second round of financing to that lab that was going to go through the National Institutes of Health.
Listen, they must know that we know that.
Well, they can hear it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's strange stuff. Okay, Tom, thanks. Let's go next to the calls. Whose turn? It is Al in Greensboro, North Carolina. Welcome to the program. Thanks for holding so long, Al.
Oh, that's no problem. Good morning, George. It's been a great show. I have a call-in, a question, and a point.
Okay.
So the comment was in reference to something that was said in the first part of the show. I don't think it's a coincidence that the first state to legalize euthanasia was the place where the first cases that got the public's attention and the first cases that got the president's attention occurred.
Yeah.
So the question, I think I heard it on this show, but I'm not sure. About 3 weeks ago, there was a report about some possible cases of coronavirus that predated the outbreak in Wuhan. I never heard it again. Do you recall that?
We have talked about that. The coronavirus itself has been around for a long, long time. This strain is relatively new, but it's been around.
Okay. Well, the reason I bring it up is because I think it makes my point. If what I heard and understood from it was true, my theory is that Kim Jong-un is the one that's responsible for it.
The North Korean.
Yeah. Even though I agree with your first guess that there are other non-nation state forces that are heavily involved and tend poised to gain from it, I still have the theory that Kim Jong-un is responsible for it. And if it actually did break out in the part of China that borders across the river from North Korea, that would seem to bolster my theory. He had a reason, and I can give you the reason.
What do you think?
He told the president, you have to conclude your negotiations with me. But the president told China at the same time, no, you, China, have to conclude your negotiations with the United States right away. Before the end of December, you have to conclude your negotiations with the United States. And that's how they ended up coming up with that first phase of agreement.
And then Kim also say something about a Christmas gift in December?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. That was a public statement that was verified, I believe. So what seems to have happened is that Trump at least partially succeeded in peeling China off away from North Korea. And Kim Jong-un knew that without being able to have China as his backup, he had no leverage left.
That's right.
The rockets weren't going to do it anymore. He knew that. So China being there to back him up, he had no leverage left. So he had reason to punish us and China.
I wonder if they have a lab in North Korea. I'm not so sure about that, Al, but that's worth checking into to be sure. Next up, we've got Mitchell in Santa Clara, California. Hey, Mitch, welcome.
Thank you, George. I appreciate your politeness and your tolerance.
But the tolerance is there. That's for sure.
You know, for 75 years, Truman had the onus on him as the world's worst villain with Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but now I think it's the president of China. But, you know, there were three objectives if they did this on purpose. One of them, in my opinion, was the Hong Kong protest.
Yep.
The other was the failing impeachment hearings against Trump. And the third one was the biggest story they're afraid of, about who killed John Lennon and the American people.
Steve Lightfoot. That's Steve Lagg. I got to put him back on for a second, Danny. Let me ask him. Steve, is this you?
This is me.
This is good. Now, let me ask. You don't have to do this anymore. You don't have to sneak in. We should have you on to talk about your theories because Michael Zwirling, who owns KSCO, interviewed you for a whole show, didn't he, once?
Twice.
But don't you have a van and all that?
Yes.
But you're dead serious about this. You really think that Stephen King killed John Lennon. Tell me why.
His face matches the face of the guy who shot John Lennon when he's posing as Mark David Chapman getting the autograph. Time and Newsweek magazines are printed by the CIA. They document secrets a la bold print coded messages, including Mark David Chapman's name and letter linking himself to Reagan 3 weeks before the murder. Richard Nixon's book, The Real War, that talks about why we have to kill people like John Lennon, is photographed the day of the murder in Time and Newsweek next to Reagan under suspicious headlines like Who's In, Who's Out. And Stephen King writes about it. He's never denied it. And this story was close to breaking right before this Wuhan thing came out.
Interesting take. I'm going to put you on hold. I want you to give us your website and numbers. Fair enough?
LennonMurderTruth.com.
All right, let's do that. Tom, get his phone number, and maybe we'll work something out here. But, Mitch, you don't have to sneak in anymore. You don't have to do that. You know, we'll give you your due, and you'll talk about your theories. And I don't think it's true, but you have reasons to believe what you do. I've seen your material. I've seen your van, and you are dead serious about what you're doing. But Tommy will take it. Let's go to Jim in Sunbury, Ohio. Welcome to the program. Hey, Jim. You there? Nope, he's not there. But let's try Joel in Calgary, Alberta. Hey, Joel, welcome to the show.
Hey, George, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. I am so ticked off, George. So many things going on there. Been stuck in my house since February, and I'm fed up. Did you hear that they had somewhere in Ontario, in the universities of Ontario, they got the cure for COVID-19? Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't heard that. Tell me a little bit more.
Well, I don't know. That came on the news yesterday morning. Holy crap, this is big news. Huge news. And then nothing said ever again. I haven't heard nothing.
I'll check into that to be sure. My daughter dates a guy from Calgary and hasn't been able to see him for 3 or 4 months. They're both going crazy. And it's a tough, tough situation indeed. Darcy's with us in Dayton, Ohio. First-time caller. Hi, Darcy.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah. Is it Darcy?
No, it's Daryl.
Daryl, okay. My eyes are gone.
Yeah, I got a statement, then I got a question.
Okay.
So, this statement been on my mind. I'm African American.
Okay, sir.
And you're from Detroit.
Yes, sir.
Why don't we hear more on the what you call it, the music, what you call it, the bumping music? Why don't we hear more like Motown?
Oh, we do. We do. I spread it out. I play a lot of Motown stuff. They're the best.
Okay, I don't believe you do because I listen to you every night, but I'm not going to worry about that. This is what I don't understand. Y'all talk about fake news, right? Fake news and stuff, which okay. There's a lot of it out there.
Yes.
But you advertise, what's the new thing here? You're advertising that Newsmax, you advertise Newsmax.
Right.
It is not a novelty. It's the same people from Fox.
Well, they used to be. Some of them used to be at Fox. You're right about that.
That's all I'm saying. I'm saying it's nothing new. It's the same people. It's nothing new about it. If it was somebody new, I could say okay. But it's the same. But I understand that they're a sponsor of your show.
Oh yeah, they are. They are sponsors to be sure. Yeah.
But what I'm saying though, when you get into the fake stuff, you have to be 100% for real about it. Because everybody is fake. It's like George Carlin said, the whole system is broken and it's fake. And even on your end, now, I love you. I love what y'all do. You know, believe me. You know, because I don't believe in nothing. I don't vote. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. But when you advertise that, a guy like me, if I had just called in on listen tonight, and when that come on, immediately I'm going to turn from you. Because I'm thinking that you're like, you're being fake. Because you're advertising Sean Spicer, who was a nutcase. I mean, he was, you understand what I'm saying? The same people. So, you know, but I know you have to do it.
Well, they got a lot of people who are fresh too, but let's not get into that right now. Who are your favorite Motown performers?
Motown. I don't know. I grew up. I can remember when my mother had me and my brother eating early in the morning in the radio. Smokey Robinson, The Temptations, Diana Ross, and Supremes. You know, The Four Tops, and I thought they were really at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. I thought they was really on the radio. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're going to love this. Smokey Robinson has told us he wants to come on the show if he can work out a good date for himself.
Oh, yeah. Smokey Robinson in a miracle, you know? Mm-hmm.
That'd be great. I'd like to get Berry Gordy.
Can I say something? I don't respect him because he's fake. Because Marvin Gaye wants to put out that one album, one of the baddest albums, like What's Going On? And he wouldn't, this is what's wrong with Black America. He wouldn't let Marvin Gaye do it. It's people like that that can sell Black America. Are big people with money. Nobody's putting money into Black America.
Why didn't he let him do it?
Because he says that he's not into the message business, giving messages. He just want to play music. He's never did nothing for Black America.
But you got to admit, though, he developed some great groups.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean nothing because none of the money, listen to what I'm saying, the Arabs, the Chinese, just everybody put their money back into the neighborhoods. What's wrong with Black America is that nobody does that. Martin Luther King talked about that before they killed him. But they will not take Michael Jordan. He don't do nothing for Black America. All right, he puts no money back. If we had some of them organizing Black America, coming back, putting their money back, and quit like crying about the government or what the president gonna do, and start coming back and and organizing. See, Black America, but these people don't. Most of them, they take their money, they buy material stuff. City, they don't. So Berry Gordy to me, he's nothing. He's a house Negro. He's nothing.
Well, I gotta tell you, you're on fire to be sure. I think Berry Gordy did a great job getting Black groups into the limelight. And I don't know about this other stuff with, not pumping money back in, but I thought he did a good job. Joe in the Bronx, take it away, Joseph.
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay.
Hey, I've been listening to the show tonight, theories on COVID and coronavirus. I think, yeah, you're right. This virus was created in the lab, and it's sort of a designer virus that they figured out a way to programmable virus.
Maybe.
It seems to attack certain age groups. I noticed the underlying health issues that are connected with those age groups, but this virus mutates at an alarming rate. I just think it's being manipulated somehow through programmability.
And it's changing all the time.
Right.
I mean, it's like it's got a brain.
Well, they're programming it.
You know what? It's kind of right. Do you think they have an antidote for it?
Hopefully they have some sort of a virus. A vaccine virus. A vaccine that will prevent the virus from continuing. Do they have an antidote for it? I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure.
Have you noticed, Joe, how many people, because of this whole situation, are uptight?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. I've never seen it like this. I'm giving people a chance to sound off, and they are. They are. So you.
Well, we're fed up with this. Nobody's seen it coming.
Nobody saw it coming. Joseph, stay strong.
Thank you. You too. Thank you, George.
Let's move on to another couple more quick calls before we get to the break. Let's go to Barbara in Highland, California. Hello, Barb.
Hi, George.
Welcome to the show. Are you uptight?
Am I uptight? Oh, well, no, I'm trying to stay calm and think positive.
But, well, that's good.
You know, so I practice the power of positive thinking all the time. So
it works.
It does. I think that builds your immune system, too.
Yep, that's true. What's on your mind? What's up?
Well, I just, I've seen maybe two or three articles just recently when I was going, I go through my smartphone and I'm looking and I see what's going on the news on that. And they had, they were reporting that they've found out that in almost all the cases of the people who have died with, you know, no matter what their age, but mostly it was the elderly, of course, but no matter what their age was, that the mortality rate, what they were finding, was that they all had extremely high deficiencies in vitamin D.
Yes, you're right about that.
But the thing of it is that I just seem like, you know, there, nobody else is really bringing this up or talking about this to anybody. And, like, we get, like, out here in California, we get, you know, the daily, like, so many, you know, so many more positive tests, you know, come through, giving us the totals, you know, and then giving us the death totals, you know. And then they go through with the same thing all the time, you know, wash your hands, you know, wear your mask.
But they're not saying build up your D, build up your zinc.
But they, yeah, see, but that's just what I'm getting at, because instead of just, I mean, we've all got this. We don't need to be reminded every single day about the hand washing and the mask and stay inside and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It would be a lot more helpful if they would start, I mean, they know this now. They've got data on this now where it's showing that this has been a real factor in people not being able to lick this because of their vitamin D deficiency.
Their immune system's down.
Yes. And instead of, like, giving us the same thing over and over again, which we all have got this perfectly memorized, you know, if they would start saying, giving some information like this, you know, I mean, I have not heard anybody out here other than, you know, on that's doing these, you know, making these announcements, not even, you know, Fauci or any of the other ones, even talking about this, you know, that this is a big problem, is this vitamin D deficiency.
Well, we've talked about it on our program, Barb, and you're absolutely right. A lot of these people have been found with, you know, low vitamin D levels, to be sure. Take your supplements, folks. Build up your immune system. More open lines next. A movie came out in 2017 called The Stanford Prison Experiment. And tomorrow night on Coast to Coast, we're going to have the person responsible for that experiment. It's an incredible movie, by the way, based on a true story of a group of college student volunteers randomly divided into guards and inmates and placed in a mock prison environment. Within 1 week, the study was abandoned as the college students were transformed into either brutal or sadistic guards or emotionally broken prisoners. It's an amazing story, so we'll be talking about that on our next Coast to Coast program. And welcome back to our final segment here of Coast to Coast, and we'll do it again tomorrow. Let's go to Leo in Midland, Michigan. Welcome to the show. Hi, Leo.
Hey, George, how you doing this morning?
Fine, my friend. How are you?
Not bad. Hey, I got some bad news about your wonderful state of Michigan. I got to let you know what's going on up here.
About that flood or something's happening?
Yeah, I'm going to be heading out here pretty soon to check on one of my properties just south of the great city of Midland. And it's my understanding downtown Midland's got 9 foot of water right now.
Oh, my God. People okay?
Yeah, I think they evacuated over 10,000 people.
Jeez.
And there hasn't been any deaths that I've heard of.
And they were warned years ago that that could be a problem, weren't they?
Well, were you here in 86, George? Were you still living in Michigan?
No, I left in 78 to go to Minneapolis, but I go back and forth when my folks were there.
Okay, well, 86 was when we had the big flood that basically paralyzed the Midland and Saginaw, the Tri-Cities, for quite some time. The flood stage got to 33 feet on the Tittabawassee River in 86, and we hit 35 feet yesterday.
Oh.
And the reason we hit it, we had about 8 inches of rain, which we should have been able to handle, but we had some dams north of Midland on the river on Tittabawassee that ended up failing. And it upsets me to think that we're throwing all this money to everybody, and now the politicians are pointing fingers. I guess Trump's going to be here later today, talking to Whitmer and trying to say that they're not going to allow them to do the paper ballots if they want any federal funds for the state of emergency, and they're going to go back and forth and do what the politicians do. But it's upsetting to think that these dams failed. And first of all, I heard that the people running the dams were considered, the employees that weren't considered necessary employees.
Right, but they knew what they were doing, and it was tragic, to be sure. Leo, the time's getting us. We got to get into a special thing with Telltale Heart.
The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. True. Nervous, very, very dreadfully nervous, I had been and am. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in the heaven and the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none, passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, it was this. He had the eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold, and so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now this is the point. You fancy me mad? Madmen know nothing. But you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation I went to work. I was never kinder to the old man than during the week before I killed him. And every night, about midnight, I turned the latch of his door and opened it, oh, so gently. And then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a dark lantern. All closed, closed, that no light shone out. And then I thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it slowly. Very, very slowly, so that I might not disturb the old man's sleep. It took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening, so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. Ah, would a madman have been so wise as this? And then, when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh, so cautiously, cautiously, for the hinges creaked. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight. But I found the eye always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work. For it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning, when the day broke, I went boldly into the chamber, and spoke courageously to him, calling him by name in a hearty tone, and inquiring how he has passed the night. So you see, he would have been a very profound old man, indeed, to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in upon him while he slept. Upon the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moves more quickly than did mine. Never before that night had I felt the extent of my own powers, of my sagacity. I could scarcely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that there I was, opening the door little by little, and he not even to dream of my secret deeds or thoughts. I fairly chuckled at the idea, and perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly, as if startled. Now you may think that I drew back, but no. His room was as black as pitch with the thick darkness, for the shutters were close fastened through fear of robbers, and so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on, steadily, steadily. I had my head in, and was about to open the lantern, when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept quite still and said nothing. For a whole hour, I did not move a muscle, and in the meantime, I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in the bed listening, just as I have done, night after night, hearkening to the death watches in the wall. Presently, I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief. It was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when overcharged with awe. I knew this sound well. Many a night, just at midnight, when all the world slept, it was welled up from my own bosom, deepening, with its dreadful echo, the terrors that distracted me. I say I knew it well. I knew what the old man felt, and pitied him, although I chuckled at heart. I knew that he had been lying awake ever since the first slight noise, when he had turned in the bed. His fears had been ever since growing upon him. He had been trying to fancy them causeless, but could not. He had been saying to himself, "It is nothing but the wind in the chimney. It is only a mouse crossing the floor, or it is merely a cricket which has made a single chirp." Yes, he had been trying to comfort himself with all these suppositions, but he had found all in vain. All in vain, because death, in approaching him, had stalked with his black shadow before him and enveloped the victim. And it was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he neither saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. When I had waited a long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern. So I opened it. You cannot imagine how stealthily, until at length a simple dim ray, like the thread of the spider, shot from out the crevice and fell upon the vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open, and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with a perfect distinctness, all a dull blue, with a hideous veil over it that chilled the very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray, as if by instinct, precisely upon the damned spot. And have I not told you that what you mistake for madness is but over-acuteness of the sense? Now, I say, there came to my ears a low, dull, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well, too. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates the soldier into courage. But even yet I refrained and kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. I tried how steadily I could maintain the ray upon the eve. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder every instant. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder. I say louder every moment. Do you mark me well? I have told you that I am nervous. So I am. And now, at the dead hour of the night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet for some minutes longer, I refrained and stood still. But the beating grew louder, louder. I thought the heart must burst. And now a new anxiety seized me. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once, once only. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. I then smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes, the heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, did not vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. At length, it ceased. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the corpse. Yes, he was stone dead. I placed my hand upon the heart and held it there for many minutes. There was no pulsation. He was stone dead. his Eve would trouble me no more. If you still think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. The night waned, and I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head and the arms and the legs. I then took up 3 planks from the flooring of the chamber and deposited all between the scantlings. I then replaced the board so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out. No stain of any kind, no blood spot, whatever. I had been too wary for that. When I had made an end of these labors, it was 4 o'clock, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, there came a knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart, for what had I now to fear? There entered 3 men, who introduced themselves with perfect suavity as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night. Suspicion of foul play had been aroused. Information had been lodged at the police office, and they, the officers, had been deputed to search the premises. I smiled, for what had I to fear? I bade the gentlemen welcome. The shriek, I said, was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I bade them search, search well. I led them at length to his chamber. I showed them his treasures, secure, undisturbed. In the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from their fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. I was singularly at ease. They sat, and while I answered cheerily, they chatted of familiar things. But ere long, I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ears. But still they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. It continued and became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definiteness until at length I found that the noise was not within my ears. No doubt I now grew very pale, but I talked more fluently and with a heightened voice. Yet the sound increased, and what could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound, much such as a sound a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. I talked more quickly, more vehemently, but the noise steadily increased. I arose and argued about trifles in a high key with violent gesticulations, but the noise steadily increased. Why would they not be gone? I paced the floor to and fro with heavy strides, as if excited to fury by the observations of the men, but the noise steadily increased. Oh God, what could I do? I foamed, I raved, I swore. I swung the chair upon which I had been sitting and grated it upon the boards, but the noise arose over all and continually increased. It grew louder, 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 and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they heard not? Almighty God! No, no, they heard, they suspected, they knew, they were making a mockery of my horror. This I thought, and this I think. But anything was better than this agony, anything was more tolerable than this derision. I could bear those hypocritical smiles no longer. I felt that I must scream or die. And now, again, hark, louder, louder, louder. Louder! Villains, I shrieked, dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here, here! It is the beating of his hideous heart.
There you go, folks. Hope you enjoyed tonight's program. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.